Maria Titizian.
And I'm Rubina Margosyan, and this is The Week in Review.
Every week, we bring you the stories shaping Armenia and the region.
From politics and policy to social issues and conflict, we break down the news and what it means for you.
This week in the news, Israel-Iran conflict starting to have ripple effects in Armenia. Russian-Armenian billionaire is in pretrial detention on charges of inciting the seizure of power. And Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan is in Turkey at Erdogan's invitation. These stories and more in our weekly roundup of the news.
The ongoing hostilities between Israel and Iran have led to an influx of Iranians and non-Iranians crossing into Armenia. With airspace closed, many are entering to the land border. Officials in Armenia's southern Sunik region, including the governor and the mayor of the border town of Mehri, say that for now the number of people crossing is manageable. At the instruction of Armenia's Ministry of Territorial Administration and Infrastructure, small and medium-sized buses are now transporting passengers from the Armenia-Iran border crossing to Yerevan at standardized fares. The decision was made following reports that taxi services were demanding unfairly high prices from travelers arriving from Iran. Iran is home to a significant Armenian community, around 50,000 to 60,000 people, mostly living in Tehran, Isfahan, and Tabriz. Foreign Minister Arat Mirzoyan said that Armenia is not focusing solely on Armenians in Iran, but also is prepared to assist with evacuations of citizens from other countries. The government is involved in humanitarian efforts to help foreign nationals, including groups like Indian students and citizens from Zimbabwe, China, France, and the United States, cross into Armenia and return to their homes. This process is ongoing, and the numbers are expected to increase in the coming days. The Office of the High Commissioner for Diaspora Affairs reported that there are currently no known injuries or casualties among Armenian communities in either Iran or Israel. The only reported damage is to the editorial office of the Armenian newspaper Alik in Tehran. Despite challenges with the internet and communications in both countries, the Diaspora Affairs Office maintains daily contact with the Armenian community leaders. So far, there have been no calls from Armenians requesting to leave or relocate to Armenia. In Israel, Armenians are mostly staying in shelters, while in Iran, they are primarily remaining at their homes. The High Commissioner's office also noted that several families are currently traveling by car towards Armenia on their own initiative.
The conflict has also raised security concerns within Armenia. However, Armenian officials have dismissed any imminent threats to the country, particularly to the Sunik region. Iran's ambassador to Armenia, Mehdi Sobani, stated that Tehran has no information or evidence suggesting Azerbaijan might use the Iran-Israel conflict as a pretext for aggression against Armenia. At the same time, he reiterated that Iran's red lines are clear and the country has shown it will never deviate from its chosen path. Sobani also pointed out that Azerbaijan has stated its position on recent developments, adding that the countries of the South Caucasus do not want escalation. He emphasized that peace is in everyone's best interest.
Well, the conflict could have other ripple effects for Armenia. Finance Minister Vahe Hovhannisyan said this week that while the conflict poses risks, it could also bring unexpected benefits, much like the aftermath of Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2022, when Armenia's economy performed better than predicted. Still, the ministry is preparing for potential shocks. In one risk scenario, economic growth could fall to 1.3%, down from the current 5.1% forecast. Hovhannisyan also noted that logistics and supply chains passing through Iran remain a key concern. Supply routes could be disturbed, delayed, or become more expensive if the situation escalates. Martin Galassian, the head of Armenia's central bank, warned that if the war intensifies or drags on, it could bring several risks for Armenia. First, there could be disruptions in global supply chains that Armenia relies on, especially for imports. Second, tourism could take a hit as regional instability tends to deter travel. And third, the overall level of risk associated with doing business in this part of the world could increase, which may have a broader impact on investments and financial flows. He also said that if regional conditions worsen significantly, it could lead to a general weakening of Armenia's economy. At the same time, the Ministry of Finance has not yet developed scenario analysis regarding the potential economic consequences of the conflict. Hovhannisyan explained that there are still too many uncertainties and the assumptions behind such scenarios could be highly misleading. Once the impact becomes more concrete and visible, the ministry will present the relevant analysis to the government. Meanwhile, Economy Minister Gevorg Papoyan said the conflict has already started to affect some Armenian businesses. He noted that several shipments are currently stuck at the port of Bandar Abbas, with others halted along the roads. Armenia is facing export delays, and importers bringing goods from Iran or from other countries through Iranian territory are also encountering a range of problems. Iran is a major trade partner for Armenia. According to 2024 data, it ranks fourth after Russia, China, and the United Arab Emirates, with trade volumes exceeding $730 million. Key imports from Iran include fuel, construction materials, metals, and other essential goods.
Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan is currently in Turkey on a working visit, where he is expected to meet with President Recep Tayyip Erdogan at 7 p.m. Yerevan time. The scope of the meeting and the specific agenda points have not been publicly disclosed. Earlier, Parliament Speaker Alan Simonian had stated that both Armenia-Turkey and Armenia-Azerbaijan relations will be discussed. In recent years, Armenia and Turkey have reached several agreements that are yet to be fully implemented. The sides have agreed to open the border for third country citizens and diplomatic passport holders, assess the situation of the Gyumri-Gars railway, and restore the historic Ani Bridge. Also part of Pashinyan's delegation are Foreign Minister Ararat Mirzoyan, Special Envoy on talks with Turkey Ruben Rubinian, and Deputy Foreign Minister Vahan Gostanyan. Gostanyan was in Ankara just days ago to meet with his Turkish counterpart, Turkey's Deputy Foreign Minister Beriz Akinci. It was Deputy Minister Akinci who welcomed Pashinyan at the Istanbul airport earlier today. As part of the ongoing rapprochement, Pashinyan and Erdogan have met several times in recent years, including in Prague in October 2022, New York in September of 2024, and in Tirana last month. Pashinyan had also attended Erdogan's inauguration back in 2023. Most recently, they spoke by phone on June 5. In Istanbul, Pashinyan met with Armenian community members. Yerevan and Ankara still do not have formal diplomatic relations, but former presidents Levon Derpetrosyan and Serzh Sarkisyan have also visited Turkey on multiple occasions since independence.
Well, in local news, Russian-Armenian billionaire Samvel Garabedian has been detained for 2 months on charges of inciting the seizure of power. His lawyers have appealed the decision. The situation escalated earlier this week when Garabedian publicly backed the Armenian Apostolic Church amid growing tensions with Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan, who has accused senior clergy of violating their vows and attempting to undermine state authority. In an interview, Garabedian said that if politicians failed to act, he would participate directly in defending the church and the Armenian people, and a statement that drew sharp reactions from the government. Soon after, Pashinyan accused Garabedian and top clergy of acting against Armenia's sovereignty and vowed to render them passive. And he said, forever. Well, security forces later raided Garabedian's villa in Yerevan. Pashinyan's spokesperson linked Garabedian's actions to methodologies from the north, an apparent reference to Russian interference. The prime minister also called him a scoundrel and challenged him to come out of hiding. The feud has also reignited calls to nationalize the country's power grid, currently owned by Garabedian's Tashi Group. The Electric Networks of Armenia, ENA, was fined this week for violations related to electricity distribution, the latest in a string of regulatory actions. While Garabedian has previously dismissed rumors of nationalization, a government memo dated May 21 reveals that Pashinyan described Armenia's energy sector as being in crisis and warned that ENA would be nationalized if it fails to compensate consumers for power outages. And he was saying that he was in the Lori region and there wasn't a household there who didn't sustain damages, that like their refrigerators, TVs, and other electronic appliances. And we were facing in Yerevan as well.
Yeah, last year.
The ENA was privatized in 2015 through a deal worth around $720 million. It is majority owned by Garabedian and his son. Critics warned that nationalization could damage investor confidence, trigger legal challenges, and strain relations with international lenders, including the EBRD and the Asian Development Bank, which hold ENA shares as collateral. While the government has yet to outline how nationalization would proceed, some experts say Armenian law does not provide a clear mechanism for it. Others argue it could result in higher electricity tariff, a state ownership, or a reprivatization disrupts needed investments. Meanwhile, health inspectors have shut down 8 branches of Dashi Pizza, part of Karapetyan's business empire, citing food safety violations. While the inspections were initially requested by the company itself, the clampdown intensified in parallel with the political standoff. But to be fair, just like weeks ago, there was a major case of poisoning in one of the Dashi branches. And it's kind of a repeat story with Dashi Pizza, yes, isn't it?
I haven't been in one in
since I was a student last time I went. And just a backgrounder, Karapetyan, long seen as a Kremlin-allied oligarch with major investments in Armenia, has a history of criticizing Pashinyan and his policies. In the aftermath of Armenia's defeat in the 2020 Karabakh War, Karapetyan joined calls for Pashinyan's resignation. However, the two later held meetings in June of 2021 and July of 2022. Since then, Karapetyan has repeatedly denounced Pashinyan's increasingly Western-led foreign policy, especially the growing distance between Yerevan and Moscow. He is also a major benefactor of the Armenian Apostolic Church, having funded the restoration of the Echmiadzin Cathedral and deconstruction of the large Armenian Cathedral in Moscow. Karapetyan, whose wealth is estimated at about $4 billion, made his fortune in Russia and has a significant presence in the Armenian economy, as we see. In addition to the electrical networks, his Tashir Group controls two other strategic assets, the Hrazdan thermal power plant and the Sevan Hrazdan cascade, a series of 7 hydropower plants.
Samvel Karapetyan's arrest is stirring speculation about possible Russian meddling ahead of Armenia's 2026 parliamentary elections. Russian media recently reported that Sergei Kiryenko, a top Kremlin strategist, has been tasked with reasserting Moscow's influence in Armenia, a role he's played before in other contested regions. Russia quickly condemned Karapetyan's detention. The foreign ministry called the charges strange, promised legal support, and Kremlin-linked media figures launched personal attacks on Prime Minister Pashinyan. Russia Today's infamous, I guess we can say, Margarita Simonyan praised Karapetyan as a, quote, champion of all Armenians, while TV host Vladimir Soloviev went as far as saying Armenia might cease to exist under Pashinyan's rule. Domestically, Karapetyan received backing from opposition leaders, former officials, and the Armenian church. Two bishops, along with several priests, even attended his court hearing. It was a real strange sight for me to see that, to be honest, Rubina. Anyway, some civil society activists claim he planned to enter politics, possibly prompting a preemptive crackdown. Others argue he may be acting with Kremlin support to prevent the nationalization of the electric grid. Pro-government voices, meanwhile, are comparing him to Georgia's Bitsina Ivanashvili, a Russian-made billionaire who returned home and helped oust pro-Western leadership.
Well, meanwhile, the Russian insider reported that a pro-Kremlin disinformation network known as Matryoshka has begun targeting Armenian Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan in what appears to be a coordinated smear campaign. According to researchers at the Bot Blocker Project, which monitors troll activity online, this is the first time the bot network has directed its efforts at the Armenian leader. Since June 12, a wave of posts criticizing Pashinyan have appeared across platforms like X and TikTok. The videos accuse him of presiding over the highest level of corruption in the Middle East and even allege that he is downplaying the Armenian genocide. Some of the content includes bizarre claims such as Pashinyan supposedly taking strong tranquilizers. The videos often mimic the branding of reputable media outlets, including Euronews, France 24, and Turkish and Armenian news platforms, as well as fabricated interviews with academics. One such video falsely presented Canadian professor Josh Kurek as claiming that Armenia's leadership has been silencing discussions on the genocide. However, investigators found that the clip was manipulated using just 5 seconds from a completely unrelated video in which Kurek introduces himself before speaking about ecological topics. That took creativity. Well, according to the insider, the bot network appears to be attempting to undermine Pashinyan's credibility both domestically and internationally by pushing narratives that conflate internal criticism and fabricated or distorted content.
Well, it's certainly been an interesting week, Rubina. The day that Garabedians and Pashinyans and the church's discussion, let's call it, exploded, Armenia's National Security Service Chief Armen Abazian was dismissed without any official explanation amid speculation that his sacking was linked to the ongoing standoff involving Garabedian, Pashinyan and the church. Abazian had served through extremely difficult circumstances and had simply earned the right to rest. Abazian was the fifth and longest serving NSS chief under Pashinyan, holding the post for 5 years. He was appointed on November 8, 2020, just one day before the end of the 44-day war, and led the agency through some of the country's most turbulent periods, post-war unrest, the storming of government buildings, the assault on then-parliament speaker Ararat Mirzoyan, snap elections, repeated Azerbaijani attacks, and the ethnic cleansing of Artsakh. His dismissal has raised concerns among families of missing soldiers. Abazian had been heading the commission working on the issue of the missing, and many feared that progress could now stall. Following the announcement, a small group of relatives blocked Pagramyan Avenue in Yerevan. They later attempted to block Herati Street in the city center, but were stopped by police. They are demanding a meeting with the new acting NSS director, Antranik Simonian. Initially, they also called for Abazian to be reinstated. The demonstrators reopened the street today, actually, after 2 days, after reaching a mutual understanding with representatives of the National Security Service. They were promised a meeting with the official who will be responsible for overseeing the issue of the missing soldiers. Armenia is currently raising the issue of around 1,200 missing persons. According to official data, 993 Armenians have been missing since the early 1990s and another 191 since the 2020 war. Pashinyan, however, told Parliament that the change in the National Security Service leadership does not and cannot change anything, emphasizing that institutional responsibility remains intact.
The Ministry of Defense reported that on the morning of June 20, Azerbaijani armed forces opened fire in the direction of the village of Nerkinhand in Armenia's Sunik province, damaging a residential home. No casualties were reported. The ministry has once again called on Azerbaijan to investigate the incident and provide public clarification. And this week, the International Committee of the Red Cross said its representatives visited Armenian detainees being held in Azerbaijan in June. According to ICRC spokesperson Zara Amatuni, private interviews were conducted with the detainees in Baku, who were also able to establish contact with their families and receive parcels sent by them. The visits focused on monitoring their health, treatment, and conditions of detention. Despite Azerbaijan's earlier announcement of plans to shut down ICRC's Baku office, the representation continues to operate for now. According to official figures, 23 Armenians are currently in Baku, 5 were captured following the 2020 Artsakh war, while the rest were detained in 2023, including 8 former Artsakh officials. And in other news, the parliament rejected the controversial bill that would allow conscripts to serve a shorter term in the army by paying a fee. Earlier, the Armenian government had approved the bill, which proposed that citizens between the ages of 18 and 32 would serve just 1 month by paying $61,000 and 4 months for $46,000. The bill had sparked criticism from human rights advocates who warned it could deepen inequality by creating different rules for those who can afford to pay and those who cannot. And a police officer who had assaulted a journalist this week during a live broadcast was dismissed and is now facing criminal charges. The incident took place during a protest in the village of Katsakh in Armenia's Kotayk region, where residents were demanding the restoration of the bus route connecting the village to Yerevan. The direct connection had been removed as part of Yerevan's ongoing public transportation reforms. Live footage showed journalist Mary Manukyan approaching officer Alexander Azadian with her microphone to ask a question. Azadian turned towards her and began shouting. As Ms. Manukyan's colleagues attempted to move her away, she called out to other officers asking if they had witnessed witnessed their colleague's behavior, Azarian then turned and aggressively shoved the journalist. He has since been fired from the job. However, unfortunately, this was not his first misconduct during service. Well, former President Robert Kocharyan has filed two separate civil lawsuits against Prime Minister Pashinyan and Parliament Speaker Alen Simonyan, demanding a court order compelling them to retract statements made about him. He is seeking a 6 million dram, this is $15,000, in damages from Pashinyan for defamation, and a total of 9 million drams from Simonyan, and this is about $23,000. Kocharyan's lawsuit against Pashinyan centers on statements made during a recent cabinet meeting where the prime minister claimed that a court has officially recorded that Robert Kocharyan is a bribe taker. Meanwhile, the lawsuit against Simonyan targets remarks he made in response to one of Kocharyan's interviews in which the former president called the current authorities corruption geniuses and suggested that Pashinyan might be Armenia's richest man. Simonyan told Kocharyan to see a doctor. In other news, the Armenian government finalized the purchase of a new embassy building this week, and this time in Brussels. The property, formerly the headquarters of the Federation of Enterprises in Belgium, was built between 1866 and 1870. It's located, just like any real estate talk, it's located steps away from the European Commission, the European Parliament, and other key institutions in a district that also hosts several other embassies. The building was purchased for 4.3 million euros. In recent years, Armenia has also secured permanent embassy buildings in Paris and London. And that was all for this week. Briefly about the articles that we published, Deterrence and Coercion, Armenia and Azerbaijan's Diverging Defense Postures, is an article we published today by Sosi Tatikyan, and she talks about Armenia's defense reforms aimed at deterrence, Azerbaijan's intensification of its military buildup and superiority despite ongoing peace talks. Tatikyan analyzes diverging strategies, spending and alliances, highlighting how the military imbalance threatens regional stability and undermines prospects for lasting peace. I know it sounds like an article that we've published over and over again, but this is in a very Sosi Tatikyan manner, very detailed, very academic, and it does lay out a very clear picture of what is happening. We also this week have a piece in our Newswatch section. It's titled Pashinyan Moves to Nationalize Energy Grid. It's a subject that we talked about in this podcast, but if you would like to read in detail, in more detail, or just see it in print, you can find it in our NewsWatch section. And an article that we published this week, again, a political, it's called New Frontlines, Armenia Looks to Central Asia. It's by Hovhannes Nazaretyan, and it says, as Armenia reorients its foreign policy away from Russia, it is deepening ties not only with the West, but also with non-Western partners. He looks into Armenia's evolving engagement with Central Asian states as part of that strategy. And another article that was in our etc. section, where typically our articles aren't political, but this one was. It's called Framing Armenia, Festival Politics and Stories that Make the Cut. It's by Sona Karaborosyan, who typically does our film reviews and reviews festivals that she, film festivals that she attends. And this time it was about the Berlinale. This year, two Armenian films were featured in the festival, marking a rare milestone. However, Karaborosyan explores their significance, the shifting politics of international film festivals, and how Armenian cinema navigates recognition, identity, and the quiet constraints of global cultural power. Even though it's generally true a lot about many festivals, in particular, this is a German film festival that she's talking about. And she's also saying how the festival program has changed and the selections have changed and how this has made way for new films to come in, but not necessarily fairly. We also have another piece about the Iran-Israel conflict by a first-time contributor, Rafi Ardaljan. It's called Civic Defense is Statecraft, Lessons from the Iran-Israel Conflict for Armenia. And in light of the Iran-Israel conflict, Ardaljan argues that civil defense is a core function of sovereignty and a tool of statecraft, less about the technical fixes, more about political will. Armenian political thought, he stresses, begins with readiness, not rhetoric. And finally, an article that's not really political this week. It's about electric vehicles by Hranush Dermoyan. The author looks at the booming market for electric vehicles in Armenia, which is driven by import incentives and global trends. But as electric vehicle adoption escalates, the country faces a looming challenge: how to safely recycle lithium iron batteries in a system unprepared for hazardous waste disposal. And the subject, not the electric vehicles, but hazardous waste disposal, is a subject we have talked over and over again on EVN Report, and is definitely a challenge in Armenia. And on this note, that was all for this week. We will be back again next week with more news.